evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, October 23rd, 2018. A former senior South Sudan government official is sentenced to 10 years in prison for raping a child.
Suspect John Dengboth. The court charges you as follows. 1. Imprisonment for a period of 10 years, starting from January 21st, 2018.
And rebel leaders are expected to attend peace celebrations in Juba.
On the 30th of this month, all opposition leaders and officials, Riek Machar, Lam Akol, Chang Son, and all those who signed the revitalized peace agreement, they will all be with us here in Juba.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A high court judge in Juba sentenced a 47-year-old government official to 10 years in prison for raping and defiling a 9-year-old girl. Former Fangak State Health Minister John Deng was arrested after raping the girl last January, but was freed shortly after he threatened the girl's parents. A civil society group took up the case in September and Deng was arrested. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
Almudan John Dengboth.
Suspect John Dengboth. The court charges you as follows. 1. Imprisonment for a period of 10 years, starting from January 21st, 2018.
Federal Judge Mujahid Abdullahi Akol announces both sentences in a small courtroom inside a Juba police station in front of 15 people, including the victim's father. Olimp Gadin, an aunt of the victim who attended today's sentencing, says she is satisfied that both will stay behind bars for a long time.
I'm so very happy. God bless the justice Juba. Even he attacked me with the 5 guns, 5 police.
Her husband, Member of Parliament Philip Palette Gadin, says both sent military officers and state officials to coerce the family into withdrawing the case. But the family refused to do so. Gadin says both should have received a longer prison sentence for defiling a 9-year-old girl.
We expected maximum sentence so that this thing can deter others. But it's all right. I'm happy that he's proven guilty and the kind of sentence he received is not bad.
Rhett Malowal, Executive Director for Screen of Rights, strongly encourages all rape victims as well as victims of other crimes to seek legal assistance.
Sometimes people may not have a zeal to pursue justice because they think they cannot get it. But now it's a precedent that people can be able to seek justice and they can get it. So this is a good precedent for the Republic of South Sudan, particularly in the area of criminal procedure.
Defense lawyer Robert Badri of Badri and Associates says he's pleased with today's outcome, even though he wanted the maximum sentence.
We opted for 14 years. That is the maximum sentence. And throughout the process, we've been trying our level best to ensure we get the maximum sentence. But we also know that in any case, there are circumstances, there are mitigating factors, several factors that courts take into consideration while rendering a judgment. So to me, as the legal counsel to the complainants, I see it from the perspective of justice, that the person is pronounced guilty of rape.
Badri says when he agreed to represent the victim 2 months ago, the accused was free to roam the streets of Juba while attending court sessions. But he says the prosecution will ensure that Deng finishes his 10th term. He also believes a man accused of raping a child should be held without bond until a verdict is reached.
A convict should not be roaming with people in the streets and should not be within the society. So because the message behind conviction and sentence is that someone has to be taken away to punish them, one, to deter the society, and to protect the society against such elements. So we are going to monitor, yes, through the family.
The vast majority of rape cases in South Sudan never get to court because victims do not report the crime for fear of the stigma often attached to the victim. Many also don't believe anything will be done to punish the perpetrators. Both was still serving as chairman of a state commission on peace, healing and reconciliation when he was sentenced today. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
The South Sudan government has allocated 700 million South Sudanese pounds, the equivalent of $3.5 million, for peace celebrations later this month. The presidential spokesman, Ateng Wek Ateng, is defending the lavish expense on a party while hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese go hungry. Ateng says it is a good gesture to show the government is serious implementing the peace deal. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Juba.
Juba has set October 30th as the day to celebrate the signing of the revitalized agreement to resolve the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan. The deal signed in Khartoum last month by the government and opposition parties. Presidential spokesman Ateng Wek Ateng says the day provides an opportunity for President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar to show the world they are going to work together again.
It's not a matter of celebration only alone, but it's also cementing the relations between the political leaders who were actually fighting themselves, and to show in front of people of South Sudan that they are confident to work among themselves. So, as people say always, peace has never been free of charge.
Some Juba residents say it is outrageous that the government is willing to spend millions of dollars on a celebration when fighting continues in parts of the country and thousands of people still don't have enough to eat. Resident Malek David is one of them. He says the citizens deserve a public apology from Kiir and Machar.
If this celebration is going to happen, we need all of them to come forth and seriously apologize to the citizens for what they have done, for the ruins they have caused, and let it be sincere from their hearts, because I believe this, the people who are the citizens are hurt. They are very hurt, and there's no kind words that can, you know, bring them back to joy or the jolly mood that they've always been, because they have lost many dear ones.
A recent report by the Sentry says more than 300,000 people were killed in the conflict. At least 4 million South Sudanese were forced to flee their homes, either to live in refugee camps of neighboring countries or IDP settlements. David says spending this kind of money on a celebration is wrong.
When you bring out a budget as big as this, you know, if there are questions, why is it that this budget is coming up right now? And with all this time, people have been, you know, suffering and nothing has been provided to help these needy people.
Ateng says it costs money to invite opposition political leaders to Juba.
If you are to invite leaders to come from outside, including the opposition leaders who would be coming to Juba, and you want to put their security, at the highest level, okay, you will also be paying the security cost. You will be accommodating them. These are not free of charge. And this amount is within reason.
Another Juba resident who prefers to be identified only as Grace believes it is appropriate to spend $3.5 million on a celebration so long as it helps foster unity among the South Sudanese people and ensure peace prevails.
It's worth it because when you look at the past experiences that people have gone through, there has been a lot. People have suffered now that they have invested that money for peace celebration. Let it come through. Let it really come through, because we have waited for this.
Ateng says the Kiir administration has invited several heads of state from the IGAD and East African community to attend the celebration in Juba. The huge party will take place at the John Garang Mausoleum. Streets in Juba have been decorated and billboards have gone up on major streets announcing the celebrations. Some of the billboards bear the pictures of President Kiir and Riek Machar shaking hands while in Khartoum. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Still in Juba, the head of South Sudan's National Pre-Transitional Committee, which is tasked with implementing pre-transitional arrangements ahead of the formation of a new government, says Riek Machar and other senior opposition leaders are expected to attend the peace celebrations next Tuesday in Juba. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
Speaking in Arabic, Tud Galwak Keo, chairman of the organizing committee for the peace celebrations, says opposition leaders Lama Akol and Riek Machar will attend the celebration.
In accordance to the invitation by the president, on the 30th of this month, all opposition leaders and officials, Riek Machar, Lama Akol, Chang Son, and all those who signed the revitalized peace agreement, they will all be with us here in Juba on date 30. for the celebration of the signing of the peace agreement.
Speaking by phone on the line from Khartoum, Manawe Peter Gadkwoth, the SPLM-IO Deputy Head of Media and Communication, neither denied nor confirmed Machar's expected presence at the peace celebrations. Gadkwoth says Machar was in a meeting with members of the National Pre-Transitional Committee today, and he has made his position very clear regarding his attendance at the planned celebration.
Riek Machar, he again recommitted himself that he is willing to go to Juba to celebrate the peace agreement with the people of South Sudan again. But he asked the committee that people need to recommit themselves to the ceasefire, because for the last 2 weeks, there has been ongoing fighting between the forces loyal to President Al-Fakir and the forces of SPLM-IO. He asked also the committee to deliver his message to President Al-Fakir that if he wants to celebrate the peace in Juba, some of his colleagues and his friends and some political cadres that are still in the detention, they need to release them right now.
Gadkwoth says Machar is not afraid for his security in Juba because he has been in difficult security situations in the past. Lamakol could not be reached for comment. Juba resident James Dorr supports the idea of all leaders coming to Juba to celebrate the signing of the peace agreement.
It is very important. We need the peace. People are very suffering in South Sudan. Let them come and we celebrate ourselves as the South Sudanese. We are the one. We are the one people and one nation. Nobody can be any to another one. It is good to the people of Juba when we receive him in the airport, and then we celebrate.
For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Uganda. A former senior member of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition has resigned. Mut Thuruk, who posted his resignation letter on Facebook over the weekend, says he has not seen any changes within the SPLM-IO, and since joining the group in 2014, he says he has not been free to propose ideas for transforming the rebel movement into a good institution.
If you look at the issues of IO, the internal issues of IO, they are even the same to the same situations which the South Sudan is now. So, in short, the style and the leadership style of Machar is problematic, and I don't believe that he's the right person even to lead the reform, because for himself, he needs reform for himself more than he can do it for other people or for the entire country.
Mut Thuruk, some members of the SPLM-IO would say you are just a disgruntled member of the organization. What is your reaction to that?
You know, when you talk about reform, you must have an alternative system. But if you come now and check the internal system of IO, which they are going to put in place of the current regime in Juba, you may even come to the conclusion that the current one might be even better than, because for me, what is my concern? My concern is about the system, not about the person.
What's wrong with the system within the SPLM-IO?
There's no even system. If you go to the IO now, as an organization, you will find even the same corruption which is being practiced, whether in Juba or where it is there. If you talk about lack of ideology, you will find it also there. Among other things, this is about system. It is not about the one who is heading. But if someone who is seeing himself as a savior to the people, okay, is not even bringing something new, you would end up, you know, asking yourself, why am I here? What am I doing?
Talk to us about the freedom of speech. Tell us about how your meetings, your deliberations, your interactions has been within the organization.
During our meetings, and this was even before 2016 crisis of J1, okay? So SPLM was like a small group within the organization. So in a normal meetings, if you are not in a gray zone where you put your opinion straightforward, and it happened that that opinion is contrary to what the chairman wanted to be done, you can be blacklisted and you can be victimized simply because you are now urging a different opinion which is not in line with what the chairman is. So in other words, yes, you can talk, but sometimes it has some repercussion and implication on you.
What is your next move?
You know, As a concerned citizen, I have that right of joining any group. If I believe that what I want to contribute in the future of this country, and especially in the process of nation buildings, would be considered in the way that I want. But for now, I don't have an idea. But definitely, if things are going the way it is, one would decide to join the like-minded people. But up to now, I'm not yet to decide.
This sounds like you're putting conditions here. Would you mind to be specific?
I'm talking about the future of our country. You know, our people have suffered, and this is time for the leadership in our country to commit themselves. And that's why if you look at my public declaration or political declaration which I made, I mentioned that, yes, this peace agreement which was signed in Khartoum recently can bring about peace and stability in our country, but without commitment. Because if you look back, you will find even President Kiir, what he termed last time as reservation, this was used by some spoilers. Those who are seeing now with peace, they will lose their benefits. They will not get what they are getting during the war. Yeah, because for me, I believe not everybody in South Sudan is for peace. So now it is time that let the leadership in our country come to their sense and commit themselves to bring about peace. And then now the next generation will come and tackle issues to do with the nation building.
That's Mut Turuk, former secretary of SPLM-IO Justice and Human Rights Committee. He was speaking with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala, on Sunday. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, African women get a tutorial on the importance of breast cancer awareness. That story is after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how often do you keep in touch with your extended family?
Not often. No particular reason.
Daily. I call my mom daily, my brothers, my uncles, all of them, daily, at least daily.
Maybe once a year or so, because I'm busy throughout the year.
I get across my extended families. I call them maybe every two, three days, at least once in a week.
As I speak with you now, I have members of my extended family living with me in my house. And so it's a very frequent interaction with extended family.
Extended, now it depends on how far they are from me. Like my immediate first cousins, we are very close and I keep in touch with them regularly.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus, and it's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today, we are talking about breast cancer. A Ghanaian breast surgeon is working to educate young African women on the importance of breast health as breast cancer continues to rise in young women between the ages of 14 and 27. Dr. Beatrice Wifi Ada heads the Peace and Love Hospital in Accra and Kumasi, a specialist hospital that is championing the cause of breast cancer and its related diseases in Ghana. Dr. Ada tells VOA's Kim Lewis she's alarmed by the sharp rise in the sharp rise of breast cancer in young women in Ghana.
Breast cancer has become a matter of both public health concern and a developmental issue. We actually had percentage of women under age of 50 to be about 58%. That is something worth thinking about because it means that most of the women are the working group, those who are pregnant, those who have children, those have very little kids to take care of. When they are affected with the disease, and we know that in Africa, breast cancer is surrounded by myths and misconceptions that is caused by witchcraft, it's a spiritual disease, it's an incurable disease, it's a curse on a family, especially when there's a positive family history. So women do not come to the hospital early. They are not coming early. In Ghana, we've had the youngest breast cancer patient at 14 years, and as we speak, we have a 17-year-old, 19-year-old, 23, 24, 27. And when we get to the 30s, we have quite a number.
Why are so many young women now getting breast cancer in Africa?
We need to do research. Why? And we think the tumor biology is different. Why does it come so early? We are seeing the same trend in some women in the Arab countries. I don't know whether we are having similar, maybe genetic factors or similar growth pattern. Are we not exposed to some environmental factors? Because we have a lot of air pollution. We have a lot of water pollution, illegal mining going on and destroying the water bodies to our water bodies.
What are some of the things that you all are doing now to educate women on breast health?
We believe that education and awareness creation is the best way to go, because we know that early detection and prompt action should be the key, and that is our secondary preventive tool. So we educate our women, we go to the churches, that's where we find most of our women, the marketplace. We also go to the communities, the rural communities, where we find a lot of women, and we do these community outreach programs. And also to the schools, we do educate not only the women, but together with the men. Because a lot of breast cancer patients tend to hide their problems from their husbands, because their husbands are divorcing them.
Also, those women that you are treating for breast cancer, how are you treating them? Are you using a mixture of drugs and surgery? And what is the recovery rate?
We have cyclophosphamide, adamycin, but we have all of those. Because most women do not come early, sometimes we have to do palliative management. So we do chemotherapy, we do surgery, either breast conserving surgery or lumpectomy if they come early, and we follow with adjuvant chemotherapy. We also do mastectomy for those who need to have it. If we've done lumpectomy, they need radiotherapy, so they are referred to go and have radiotherapy. We have quite a number of breast cancer survivors, and during our work for the cure, the BCI Ghana work for the cure, we showcase survivorship. We presently have 800 plus breast cancer survivors who are in the Survivor Association. They have been trained on how to help others through their personal experience. Unfortunately, we have the mortality rate is so high. In 2018, just in September, the new figure that came up was 4,645 for breast cancer alone. And this is unacceptably high. If you look at the mortality out of this figure as 1,800 plus as women who will die yearly from breast cancer in Ghana.
That was Dr. Beatrice Wiefe Adaye, the Chief Executive Officer and the Senior Medical Officer of the Peace and Love Hospital in both Accra and Kumasi, Ghana, speaking with my colleague, Kim Lewis. From Accra, we move to Kampala, where a South Sudanese businessman says South Sudanese refugees in the Ugandan capital who receive no assistance from aid agencies must work hard and help each other if they want to survive. Emmanuel Adlan helps South Sudanese women start small businesses and find markets for their handmade products. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Kampala.
Adlan says it's not easy for South Sudanese women with no experience selling on the streets of Kampala to make it on their own.
Because they have like some step ahead of us here, sincerely talking. They are very active, those Ugandans. So business in Uganda is like a battlefield. You have to come early in the morning, you go very late.
Adlan has been encouraging South Sudanese women to bring their products to his shop. The South Sudanese house is located in downtown Kampala. He sells things like embroidered bedsheets, handbags and handmade necklaces and bracelets. Adlan pays the South Sudanese women for their wares, which they use to support their families.
Then we bring the stuff in the shop, we advertise for them, they get business. So we sell in the shop on their behalf, as just simple as that.
Monica Moses, a mother of three who regularly brings her hand-embroidered bedsheet and jewelry to Adnan's shop, says life was tough before she started the business.
The life was also difficult for us with my husband because we have children.
Adlan has since registered his business with the Kampala Open Market, an association that gives businesses like his an online presence and free advertisement. Adlan says from advertising on the web, he has been receiving orders from South Sudanese and other Africans in the diaspora for his products. As his business expands, Adlan employs more and more South Sudanese youth, like university student Howard Jackson, who uses the money he earns at South Sudanese house to help pay for his education in Uganda.
It helps me a lot. Transportation, catering for my upkeep and doing other things. And even the little penny I get, it makes me to help my people, my mom, especially my mom in Yambio.
Adlan says helping South Sudanese in Kampala not only empowers women to become more self-reliant, it enables them to focus on producing more goods, which helps their families thrive in Uganda. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with a beautiful melody by Rebecca Mlapo from South Africa. Been listening to Rebecca Mlope with that song Kokozana. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Check us out on our Twitter handle at VOA South Sudan. You can also leave a message on our Facebook site. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.